WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Heart disease, a type of cardiovascular disease, is the leading cause of death for Americans, according to the CDC. Not only this, but it's the leading cause of death for people around the world. Now, the American Heart Association, or AHA, is out with new numbers of their own. 6 in 10. That is how many people are projected to be impacted by cardiovascular disease by the year 2050. To learn more about these predictions and how this health problem can affect more than half of the country's population in the decades to come, I sat down with Dr. Mitchell Elkind of the American Heart Association. And I started off by asking the doctor to clear up the difference between cardiovascular disease and heart disease. Here's Dr. Elkind.
It can be a little bit confusing, perhaps. And quite honestly, I think some doctors confuse it as well. But cardiovascular disease is pretty broad and includes heart disease, but also includes things like hypertension and strokes and problems with the peripheral blood vessels as well. And so it's a little bit broader than just heart disease. So we can look at heart disease individually, or we can consider broadly cardiovascular disease, including those other items as well.
Talk more about the role that you played in that research I just quoted. Is there something happening right now that's related to cardiovascular health that prompted this study? Like, is it on the rise?
Well, it is on the rise, and that's the big concern and really the big message from these two papers that we put out, one about the prevalence of cardiovascular disease and one about the incredibly rising costs that we'll expect over the next 30 years. We projected these rates of disease and costs out to 2050. And really the kind of inspiration, if you will, to do this is that just yesterday, the American Heart Association celebrated its 100th anniversary. And so we were super happy about that. And we looked back over a century of success in research and clinical care. And really, we, together with, you know, the nation's healthcare system, were able to cut cardiovascular disease in half over the course of the last century. So that's all terrific. But what we've seen is that in the last few years, those rates that came down so dramatically have begun to tick up again for heart attacks and for strokes, certainly for conditions like obesity. And so we, you know, we think that that's a sign that we really have a lot more work to do. And that's what we're focused on in our second century.
To that end, 61% of Americans may suffer from cardiovascular disease by 2050. As I mentioned earlier, this is a jump from the current 51%. How concerned are you, doctor, about that figure?
Yeah, very concerned, of course. And just to clarify, so for that number, that really reflects high blood pressure or hypertension going from 51% to 61%.
Okay.
So by 2050, we can expect 184 million or so people to have high blood pressure. And those are just astounding numbers. You know, as you said, more than half of the population is going to have high blood pressure, which is both a kind of cardiovascular condition in itself, but also a risk factor for just about all the other forms of heart disease and stroke. So it, you know, we often call high blood pressure the silent killer because it can lead to these other conditions as well. So we are very concerned about those numbers, and we think that that's why we have to double down and try to make some progress in the opposite direction.
I mean, what else do you think is contributing to this increase? I mean, is it not mostly because our population is aging?
Yeah. So that's certainly a big factor of it. And the way we did these projections is we looked at the trends over the last 10 years or so in many of the cardiovascular risk factors like blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, body weight, and so forth. And so we projected those forward. And then we took into account the changing demographics of the population. Aging, of course, is a major part of that. As people age, they're more likely to have cardiovascular disease. In addition, though, the population is changing. It's becoming more diverse. And we see hypertension in particular, but also obesity and other risk factors at greater rates in our Black population, in the Asian population, in the Hispanic Latino population, and the American Indian and Alaska Native population as well, all compared to the white population. And so it's the changing demographics in terms of age and these other features that really tell us that there's going to be a, you know, a tsunami, if you will, of cardiovascular disease and its costs in the future.
Talk more about who is most impacted by heart disease, because I know some folks are more vulnerable than others, and you were sort of going into a racial demographic breakdown a moment ago.
Yeah, so certainly Black population and some other minority groups, as I mentioned, and really it also has to do with the underlying economic advantages or disadvantages that certain populations have and the resources available to them. So, you know, one thing the Heart Association has learned over the course of the last century is that only about 10% of your health outcomes, like your risk of having a heart attack, let's say, are due to what happens between you and your doctor in the office. Another 20% is due to how you manage your own personal risk factors. But then about 70%, 60, 70% is due to the environment in which you live. Mm. What is the neighborhood like? What is the quality of the air? What are the opportunities to get healthy food and so forth? So it's communities living in areas that don't have access to places to exercise, eat healthy food, or good air, water quality, and so forth, that are at greatest risk. So we have to find ways to improve those, what we call the social drivers of health.
Speaking of risk factors, we got a call from Aaron in the Loop who wants to know about the connection between smoking and heart disease. So, doctor, obviously we know smoking's not a healthy habit, but talk more about the heart risk there.
Sure. So smoking, of course, is a risk factor for many different conditions. Cardiovascular disease is one of those. And we know that the toxic elements that are found in cigarette smoke can have all kinds of adverse effects on the lining of the blood vessels, on the blood pressure, on all sorts of cardiovascular parameters and measures. And so that can damage the heart over time. It can lead to heart attacks. It can lead to strokes. And we did see in our analysis, interestingly, we saw some decrease in smoking rates over time.
Okay.
So that's a positive trend. But, you know, we actually didn't account for vaping, for e-smoke, you know, electronic cigarettes.
Okay, yeah.
Because those data weren't available yet. So I think we have to look at that with some caution. And, you know, maybe that people are switching to different forms of nicotine consumption.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's jump to the phones now. We've got Larry in Highland Park on the line. Hey, Larry, welcome to Reset.
Hi, doctor. I have a question. I'm 61 and I had two stents installed last summer. What is your opinion about microplastics in cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, microplastics is a great question. That's a relatively new area of research. You know, people have recognized that these so-called forever chemicals that can be found in plastics pollute the environment, the oceans, and so forth. and can be found in, within our bodies, within our tissues, within our heart, even our brain can be found in children and infants. And so this, suggests there could be a real concern there. And we're beginning to understand what those implications may be. I think it's a little bit too early to say, what those implications are, frankly, but we're certainly concerned. And I think that's an area that deserves much further research. That's a great question.
Yeah, great question. Thank you for calling, Larry. Doctor, have we talked about how diabetes and obesity play a role here?
Yeah, so some of the most concerning trends that we saw were increases in both of those. For example, right now we're frankly in a crisis. Just in the year 2024, we know that about 43%, right? 4 in 10 Americans are obese. And we see those numbers continuing to rise up to 60%. Again, 6 out of 10 by the time we hit 2050. I mean, imagine that. It's really going to be catastrophic if we don't turn that around. Similarly, diabetes starts now at about 16%, and it's going to go up to just over a quarter of people having diabetes. Just phenomenally high numbers that, are going to lead to a great deal of cost. We estimate that the costs of caring for people with cardiovascular disease are going to triple to $1.8 trillion by the time we hit 2050 in current dollars. And so these are just, rates that are going to take quite a toll on us if we don't reverse those trends.
So remind us, so we can all try to keep track here, what the standards are for things like blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol. Because we know those factors can impact heart health too.
Yeah, of course. Such a great question. So at the American Heart Association, we use a simple, easy to use mnemonic, if you will, it's not really mnemonic, but we call it Life's Essential 8. There are 8 items. There are 4 health factors and 4 health behaviors that people can learn about and monitor. So the health factors are blood pressure, which normal would be less than 120 over 80. Those thresholds have come down over several years. So if you haven't looked in a while, you'll see them being lower than you might have thought, if you last checked in 5 years ago.
Yeah.
For blood sugar, which is, essentially when it gets bad enough, it becomes diabetes. Those numbers should be less than 100 to be normal. Cholesterol, the bad cholesterol or low density lipoprotein, what we call LDL, should also be less than 100.
Okay.
And then one's weight or body mass index, less than 25 is normal for that. So those are the 4 factors. And then the behaviors are things like getting enough exercise, having a healthy diet, getting enough sleep, and of course, not smoking. So we can talk about those if you have time in more detail.
Yeah, just a little bit, if you can elaborate, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay, yeah, so for exercise, what we recommend is that people get 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity each week. So it's basically, imagine 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week would be the amount you want to get. Could include brisk walking, playing golf and so forth. So 150 minutes per week, you don't have to run a marathon, in other words.
Yeah.
Okay. A healthy diet. Mediterranean diet is a kind of classic example of that. Low in saturated fats. Fish is good, fruits and vegetables, and avoiding too much red meat and fatty proteins. Sleep, we say at least 7 hours, really 7 to 9 hours. Too much sleep may also be bad, so somewhere in that range, but at least 7 hours per night. And then, of course, as we've said a few times now, do not smoke, right? That's a simple thing you can do to quit, and there are ways that people can quit now. Talk to your doctor about it, but obviously really important to do that.
Thank you for that. We had a caller, Judy, in Glen Ellen with her question. So I'll read what she was asking. She's wondering how menopause affects cardiovascular disease. Judy's in her 60s and says that she has a similar diet and exercise to earlier in life, but she never had high blood pressure until now.
Yeah, well, certainly menopause does come, along with age as well. So as we all age, our risk of high blood pressure increases. The blood vessels become stiffer in effect, and that drives up the blood pressure. And so that's an important factor. And there's been a lot of controversy over the years with regard to the effect of menopause and is the impact driven by hormonal factors or other things. And I think we're still working that out. depends a lot on when people have menopause, and also whether they should take hormone therapy, for example, depends on how long ago they went through menopause. Mm-hmm. And so these are questions that are best addressed with your individual doctor. It's hard to, in a short period of time, make broad recommendations about it.
Right.
But yeah, we do see cardiovascular disease going up after menopause and with age as well.
Let's hear from one last caller. Here's Susan in Berwyn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I am done a little bit of research on menopause myself, and it seems like hormone replacement is a huge decreased risk for cardiovascular health because it keeps, your vascular system less stiff. But I just wondered if you guys are specifically doing research, the American Heart Association, because I know there's a lot of other research going on.
We are. We are actually just launching a very large initiative in women's health. We know that only about 2% of the research funding, over the last many years has gone to women's health specifically. And we think that that's, dramatically underfunding a major problem. Of course, women are just over half of the population, and, we should be spending a lot more money on research among them. And so we will be doing that. And the issue with hormone replacement therapy, again, depends a little bit on when it started. So although, many of us thought for many years that it would be simple to replace, the change in hormones at the time of menopause with, prescribed hormones afterwards, it turned out not to be quite as simple as that. There were some complications, including risk of blood clots, as well as breast cancer risk and so forth. And so people have been continuing to investigate that question in more detail. But again, it depends on the timing. And that's why it's important to talk with your doctor about it.
So someone could be listening to this conversation, doctor, and, they hear 6 in 10 people will have cardiovascular disease by 2050. And then we've certainly reported on the fact that people are getting cancer younger and other, fatal illnesses. You've talked about people getting cardiovascular disease younger as well. And this all can be very scary and feel like health problems are inevitable. So I wonder what you would say to someone who is feeling this kind of fear.
Well, I think that these are concerning numbers, and we at the Heart Association are using these numbers to really determine what we're going to do over the course of the next, few decades, if not century, where we're going to put our resources. And so this is, we think, a solvable problem. We just need to put our minds and our resources towards it. We did do some additional analyses in this paper where we looked at what would happen if we implemented certain risk factor reduction programs in the population at large, if we were able to reduce blood pressure rates by 10%, for example. And we found that if we could implement those changes, we could really have an effect on those trajectories and lower those subsequent risks of cardiovascular disease at the population level. So I think it's, it sounds like all doom and gloom, but there's things that we can do. I would say we need more research on how to best prevent and treat disease. Mm-hmm. We need to educate people about how to best change their behaviors. I already talked about Life's Essential 8. People can go to heart.org to read about that. And finally, advocating for some of those systems changes to address those social drivers of health, like healthy neighborhoods, healthy food availability, opportunities for exercise and healthy air quality as well. These are all things that can have an enormous impact. So it doesn't all have to be bad news.
Yeah, I appreciate you clearing that up. I am going to squeeze in one more caller who's been waiting patiently. Kitty is on the line from Naperville. Hi, Kitty. Welcome to Reset.
Thank you so much, both Sasha and the doctor, for taking the time.
Sure.
I wondered what the relationship is and how widely spread the issue of sleep apnea is with relationship to blood pressure and potential cardiovascular disease, and how that might play out over time. I've heard that could potentially be also associated with diabetes and other issues. And I will also take my answer offline. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Great question.
Yeah, I so appreciate that question. And we have learned a lot in the last several years about the importance of sleep apnea, a very common sleep problem, often People have loud snoring, but they also stop breathing during the night. They may wake up with a cough or a headache as a result of it. And that can indeed cause many cardiovascular conditions. Certainly, as your oxygen levels drop when people aren't breathing because they have sleep apnea, that can drive up the blood pressure. It can lead to heart arrhythmias that can precipitate a stroke and have all sorts of adverse effects. And so we really have to think holistically about health, and sleep is an important element of that. And that's why we included sleep in our Life's Essential 8, because we realize people need to have healthy sleep to have cardiovascular health as well. Sleep apnea is a major part of that. If you think you might have that, really important to get it checked out, because the good news is it is treatable.
Dr. Mitch Elkind is the former president and current chief clinical science officer of the American Heart Association. Doctor, thank you so much for your time, for answering mine and the listeners' questions.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having the American Heart Association on today.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Micah Yasin. It was edited by Meha Ahmed. Are you interested in hearing more conversations about health? Well, tune in on Tuesdays for our live show, or check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I'll talk to you this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.